Well, we're now in the second week of our series about how to find and enjoy true and lasting fulfillment in life. Last week, when we kicked off the series, you know, we said that fulfillment or a sense of fulfillment can be a little bit elusive. You know, as hard as we try to live good lives and do the right thing, sometimes we may not feel entirely fulfilled in certain areas of our lives or at certain times in our lives. And in those moments, we long for more. We long for more, but we may not know where to find it. That's because fulfillment is hard to find. It's harder to find than many other experiences in life, like success, contentment with your life, satisfaction with your life, or even happiness or enjoyment. All of those other experiences, those feelings, are good, and they're rewarding. They can be rewarding. But fulfillment goes deeper than that. Fulfillment is the sense that your existence in life makes sense, makes a difference, and holds ultimate meaning and value. And that's harder to find. And as we said last week, the only real way to find that is through faith and growing in faith. The problem, as we defined it last week, is that there are so many, right? So many distractions and activities and demands that compete for our time and attention. You know, the pressure to succeed at work or the obligations of family. Or just all the many daily things that you have to do to be a responsible person in this world, right? That all of that can mount up and tempt us to cut some corners when it comes to our spiritual lives. We know God loves us, right? He's always there in the background of our lives somewhere, watching over us and understanding all the stress we're going through and forgiving us when we don't make the time or sufficient time or pay enough attention to him that we know we should. God forgives us for that, and we know that. So, you know, we tend to focus on what's right in front of us, the thing that needs to be taken care of right now and can't wait in the here and now. And then, little by little, in the small amount of free time that we do have, we start to enjoy the many replacements and substitutes for religion that our secular society has devised. And there's a lot of them. There's a lot of them. I mean, think about yourselves tonight. I am willing to bet that every single one of you could have been doing something different right now, right? Rather than showing up to Mass or attending online. You could have been, I'm sure you wouldn't have been home twiddling your thumbs. Gee, I'm not going to Mass and I just have nothing to do. No, there's so many other things to do. And the problem is that those distractions and those substitutes for religion, well, they're fun. They're fun and they help us cope with the pressures and the stress of life. So we tend to indulge in them. But the problem is that even though they promise fulfillment, they ultimately can't deliver. They offer only cheap imitations of true and lasting fulfillment. So if you are feeling maybe a little blah, a little unfulfilled in your life, or maybe some area of your life, you know, maybe you're worried about the future, or maybe you've got some personal problems in your friendships or your family or in your finances or something like that. Or maybe you're just kind of feeling a little lost in life, like, you know, what am I doing? I'm drifting off course. I'm not sure, you know, this isn't what I dreamed of when I was young, you know. If you're having those kind of feelings, that's a sign of feeling unfulfilled. But as we promised at the end of the message last week, there is a road to greater fulfillment. And it all begins with a very special promise. Very special invitation, I should say. A very special invitation, and that's where I want to pick it up this week. And to do that, we're going to look at the gospel passage that we heard today. In that passage, Jesus tells a story about a king who prepared a wedding banquet for his son. Now, this would have been a wonderful affair, a very happy affair. In the tough agricultural economy of ancient Israel, where most people, you know, worked on the farm, worked in the fields, or some other form of manual labor under harsh living conditions, so much so that you may not sometimes even know where your next meal was coming from, an invitation to a wedding banquet with several days of feasting and merriment would have been a welcome relief from the daily grind. You would have thought that everyone who was invited by the king would have accepted the invitation. But that's not what happened. That's not what happened at all. Let's take a look at what happened in the story. The king dispatched his servants to summon the invited guests to the feast. Now, I just want to stop there and tell you one thing. You know, when you have a party, you probably do two invitations, right? You have a save the date that you send out well in advance of the date, right? And then later, when it comes closer to the time of the event, you send out a more formal invitation. Well, that's exactly what was happening here. The king dispatched his servants and told everybody, hey, save the date. The king is preparing a banquet for his son. But then you see what happened. They all refused. They refused to come. Well, this would have been shocking news to the king. But he pressed on. So when it was time for the second invitation to go out, he sent other servants saying, tell those invited, behold, I've prepared my banquet. Everything is now ready. Come to the feast. Come to the feast. But again, even those who had agreed to come with a save the date notice now turned the king down. And what was their excuse? Well, some ignored the invitation and went away, one to his farm, another to his business, and the rest laid hold of his servants, mistreated them, and killed them. This is truly odd behavior, isn't it? I mean, everyone spurned the royal invitation. Some were just too caught up in their daily lives and everything they had to do. They didn't think they could take the time away from their business and their farms. And others were openly hostile to the invitation. Well, what's going on here? Well, Jesus is actually using this parable to teach us something. Because every day, God, the King, is inviting us to the wedding banquet of his Son, Jesus, which takes place here every Sunday on this table of the Lord. And more than that, it can't be more than that, but in addition to that, God is inviting us even deeper into the life of, and into an active participation in the life of God's kingdom. And it's that, doing that, immersing ourselves more in the life of God's kingdom, that's where we're going to find fulfillment, true and lasting fulfillment. God's invitation is to every single person. It's an invitation to a greater, more fulfilling life with more purpose, more significance, and more meaning, a life of more love, love of God and love of other people. That's what the kingdom is all about anyway. But like the people in the gospel, we tend to make excuses. And as I was thinking about this, it seems to me that there's four basic excuses that people make to not accepting this invitation from God to a more fulfilling life by growing in faith. And just as a disclaimer or a point of honesty, at some point in my life, I have made every one of these excuses. Number one, the first excuse is just we're distracted. Right? Like the people in the gospel, we're just overwhelmed with everything we think we have to do, that we just can't stuff one more thing into our life. It's sort of like, think about it like this, it's like getting junk mail. You know, when you get junk mail, I don't know what you do with it, maybe you open every envelope and go, oh, this is an interesting offer. No. I just throw it all in the recycling bin without even looking at it. And it's so easy for God's invitation to get mixed up in all of those other things that you're being invited to do. You know, buy this or that, go on this vacation or that vacation, or do this thing or that thing. It's easy to miss God's invitation to a more fulfilling life by growing in faith. Look, there's no argument. I don't think anybody could argue that we we don't live in a distracted world. We absolutely do live in a distracted world. I was reading an article the other day in The Guardian. And this author, she makes the claim that every single one of us, almost every single one of us, has adopted an always-on, anytime, anywhere, any place lifestyle, right? You know, the average person checks their phone every 12 minutes. Teenagers, I think, and priests more often. I check my phone more often than 12 minutes. But, you know, it's bad for us. It distracts, it disrupts our sleep. It affects our mood. It actually, studies have shown that this kind of lifestyle of distraction decreases our IQ and limits our ability in the long run to focus on anything. We're in a constant state of alertness that prevents us from, like, really focusing well on anything, much less God. Well, the second excuse that some people make for not accepting God's invitation is kind of related to that, but I think it's a little bit different. It's FOMO, right? You've heard this, the kids say it. It's old news by now, right? Fear of missing out. The fear of missing out. So in this case, you know, you probably get the invitation in the mail. You go, oh, this is interesting. And people say, well, yeah, you know I should. I know I should go to church more, or I know I should do something else at church other than just going. I know I should grow in my life of faith. I know I should pray more. I know I would feel better. I want to get deeper in my faith. I want to make God the center of my life. And you're going, yes, I'm going to do that. And then that shiny new object comes around the corner. And you're like, I'm going to come back to this. I swear, God, I promise I'm going to. You know, I did this for 20 years with the priesthood. You know, it's like, I'm going to come back to it, God, I promise. I'm just going to do this one other thing first. That's the fear of missing out. We want to make sure we don't miss anything. And there are so many fun and good things to do in life. And particularly for people who have the means to do those things. That's great. But sometimes God's invitation can get shoved to the side because we're afraid of missing out. Well, a third excuse that people sometimes make is habit. And this one, I think, affects church people and religious people like myself the most. Like, I can sometimes get stuck in a rut, you know? And I live here at the church, not here. I don't sleep on the pews, but I live over there, and I'm always here in the church, you know, doing something, baptisms, funerals, weddings, prayer services, masses, you know, whatever, or setting up for those things. I'm always here, so I'm always doing the right thing. I'm around God all the time, right? Except sometimes I kind of focus so much on the thing that I'm doing out of habit that I forget the reason I'm doing it, the reason that I'm engaging in that ritual. And that's what this excuse is about. It's not really an excuse, it's just kind of what happens, is some people get so focused on the rituals of life, including religious rituals, that the ritual becomes an end in and of itself. Just because, you know, I do this out of habit, this is what I do. Rather than the ritual being a means to a greater end of getting closer to God, the source of all fulfillment. It reminds me of a story about a nun that I know, a nun whom I adore, N-U-N, right, a sister. I adore her. She's about 5 foot nothing, and she's in her late 70s, and she runs around her parish like she's in her 20s. And she's always on, in a good way, always doing something good, always helping people, always wanting to do more, more, more for God, right? She has the biggest heart I know. Well, one day, I'm in the church with her, and she's rushing around doing things, setting up for something, I forget what. And I caught her doing something as she was sprinting across the church, practically sprinting. You know, when you cross the center axis of the church, you know what you're supposed to do, right? When you cross the center axis, you're supposed to turn and bow profoundly to the tabernacle because there's the presence of Jesus in there, and then continue on your way. But that's not what this sister did. What she did instead, in her haste, as she's running to get everything done, is she walks like this, and then she kind of does a side bob, and she keeps going, and her veil is flapping, and I'm like, sister, and I couldn't resist, because I love her so much, right? I couldn't resist affectionately teasing her and chiding her. I said, sister, you're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to turn and profoundly bow. And she's over in the corner, and she looks back at me with that twinkle in her eye and says with that thick Italian accent of hers, oh, Jesus, no, I love him. It's true, right? Jesus knows that she loves him. Jesus knows I love him. Jesus knows you love him. But sometimes the habit of doing what we're supposed to do to show that we love him, we kind of forget that we actually need to focus and be mindful so that we can grow in our faith and become more fulfilled in our lives. One last distraction probably doesn't impact anyone here, but it is simple disinterest. Flat out disinterest in the invitation. For these people, they know what they're being asked to do. They know that there's an invitation from God for a more fulfilling life. They know that maybe it might be a more fulfilling life, but they're just not all that interested. Or, like the people in the gospel who killed the king's servants, they might be openly hostile to the invitation and openly reject the claims of faith and especially organized religion. And the sad thing is, for people like this, whom we love very much and want to come, we're always doing everything we do is not everything we do, but a lot that we do is to try to attract this kind of person. But the sad thing is, when they reject the invitation outright, they keep climbing up a ladder that they don't even realize is leaning against the wrong wall. Well, those are the four excuses. Let's go back briefly to the story and see what happened to the people who made those excuses. I got to tell you, it wasn't very pretty. Here's what happened. The king was enraged and sent his troops and destroyed those murderers and burned their city. And then he said to his servants, the feast is ready, everything is ready, but those who were invited were not worthy to come. So go, therefore, out into the main roads and invite to the feast everyone you find, basically, everyone you find. Now, you may think that the king kind of overreacted. I don't know, they killed his servants. I might have done the same thing. But Jesus tells this story to warn us with love about the real damage we can do to our lives when we're too distracted, too preoccupied, too stuck in a rut, or just too disinterested to accept God's gracious invitation to a more fulfilling life by growing in faith. But God is gracious, and every day he invites us. Every day we get this renewed invitation, like the servants who go out and invite everyone, good and bad alike. God is always inviting every single person out of love for that invitation. There's one more wrinkle that happens in the story I want to tell you about, because it's important we understand it. When the party happened, the king came in to meet the guests, and he saw a man there without a wedding garment, and he threw him out into the darkness. So what's going on there? Well, basically, the man showed up at an extremely formal event hosted by the lavish generosity of the king himself. He just showed up in his street clothes without wearing his Sunday best. Now, this is not about what you wear. It's not about clothing. It's about the fact that this man did not do a single thing, did not expend any effort in preparing himself to accept the king's invitation. And that showed great disrespect to the king, and of course, because of that, there was punishment. What does that teach us? That if we want to accept God's invitation to a more fulfilling life by growing in faith, we have to make a minimal investment. You know, anything of value requires an investment, right? If you want your house to increase in market value, you have to take care of it, right? If you want a happy home life, you have to spend time with your family. If you want your bank account to grow, you have to put money in it, right? Anything of value requires an investment, and so does our faith. If you want to live a more fulfilling life, you have to invest in your spiritual life. You have to invest in your spiritual life. And there's a lot of ways you do that. For some people, it might just mean more frequent mass attendance. That's a good thing to do. Every week, we try to bring our best to you. You know, world-class music, relevant messages, at least I hope, really great hospitality at the doors so you feel welcome and like you belong. But even for those of you who come every week, there may be another step you can take, a little bit more investment you can make in your faith. For example, you might consider being in one of our small groups. We have many small groups, and I got to tell you, this Lent, we are planning a huge promotion of small groups around a book. I already bought 200 copies, so everyone who's in a small group gets a free copy, and I want everyone, 200 people in a small group. That's our goal. It's a big goal, but it's going to be great. Lots of small groups around this book in Lent. So consider that and pray about that. Or maybe you might want to join a ministry or a mission here at the church and serve other people. There's no greater antidote to feeling unfulfilled than helping other people. Or maybe you might want to reconsider your level of giving to the church. I know that sounds self-serving, but money is a spiritual matter. It really is. And the more you give, the more you grow in a spirituality of generosity and gratefulness for what God has given you. Or you might just want to start by praying more often and for longer. Whatever it is, God is proud of you for just taking that next step. And even if it's a tiny baby step, it's enough to unlock the door to a more fulfilling life.